Advertising your business with GCN is simple, effective,
and more affordable than you might think.
Visit advertise.gcnlive.com for more info. Take your business to the next level.
Welcome back to the Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio. And now, here's Gene Steinberg.
Now, listeners have heard about this before. So Denise meets this person aboard a UFO. Later on, they get in contact with one another and share the same abduction experience from different parts of the country, people who didn't know one another. Where do you take that, Tim?
I would think if I had been involved in a situation like that, I'd be able to remember the case, but then the person that I would contact would have no recollection at all and just, you know, be like, okay, who's this weirdo? How did they get my number?
Even being interested in this field, I'm wondering, you know, if someone showed up at my doorstep one day and was like, hey, don't you remember me from inside the saucer? I don't know what I'd say.
But that's an intriguing concept, though, because there was six-shooter who has done several books on Native American UFO encounters. There was a case in one of her books where two children met up on allegedly on a UFO, and then years later they came across each other in normal circumstances and recognized each other, and I think, if my memory serves me correctly, ended up getting married. And, they attribute, their being able to get married because they met up on a UFO.
Oh, my gosh. See, and I think that, possibly something that does seem to pop up quite a bit is synchronicity. Whether that's in especially UFO-related incidents or hauntings or ESP-type phenomena, it seems as though certain things just kind of fall into place very often with these encounters.
I'm looking at your book here about the various references you make to your source material. And, I know a few of these people, of course. I've met Hynek, and I know Valvey and John Keel and everything. And Jerome Clark is somebody I've known 50, 60 years. But you mentioned some real pioneers of UFO research, Ted Blosher and Isabel Davis. They worked with an organization called CSI of New York. And that's not the CSI New York TV show about crime scene investigators. That was Civilian Saucer Intelligence of New York and was one of the most respected organizations in the country. This is like the 50s and 60s. Interesting you came upon that material.
Oh, yeah. Well, their coverage of the Kelly Hopkinsville affair, it was amazing to, especially for me, because, that case has been reprinted in so many different places with so many different narratives and so many different extra little tidbits and things like that. But to hear the response of the witnesses and how life was for them after everything that happened, that's one of the most interesting aspects of any encounter for me, is to see how the witnesses really went about dealing with it. And so to hear that, the entire family, the associated with the Kelly Hopkinsville event, they just were tired of it. And you get that a lot with these high-profile cases when people are consistently bothered by reporters and, yes, investigators, and handling their strange encounter with varying degrees of seriousness and varying degrees of belief. I can imagine that must be very trying at the end of the day.
Well, I can assume that maybe a small number of people really seek the fame and the fortune or hope for it. But those of us who have been following this for more than a few decades can tell you don't make money from it. There are a few books that do. But most of us, if we can make a living at all, if we're not like Brad Steiger was, the late Brad Steiger, or now Nick Redfern, where he writes 26 books every hour, it doesn't work that way.
Yeah. I mean, and especially, too, I feel like so often for witnesses, when they have an event as prominent as, the Pascagoula abduction, or even the Cisco Grove encounter is another great example, or Kelly Hopkinsville, so many of these, where something so bizarre happens to them, they have to deal with that personally. They have to reframe how they look at the world so they can include what has occurred, which in many cases, you know, they end up believing their own narrative about it. And then in addition to that, they have to deal with the public eye. And so, you know, it really is that witness response is definitely, it's intriguing as well. Because also, you know, the thing is that, and at the end of the day, this is what I always come back to. You know, not that I'm constantly thinking of the skeptics, like, you know, with the capital S, but it's one of those things that I think of from time to time. Just, you know, how can you not see the importance of this field? Because at the end of the day, you know, if none of this stuff is actually occurring, which is definitely not my conviction, I do believe that there is a huge, huge swath of anomaly that is present in our culture and has always been present in, you know, humanity. You know, at the end of the day, if none of that stuff is actually happening, the question remains, why do we believe it's happening? Why do people consistently believe that these things are occurring? And I can't imagine not wanting to figure that out at the very least.
Your book has just, you know, it's a fantastic book, I should say, by the way, Zaya.
Thank you.
Really enjoyed it. And there are a lot of chapters that are, you know, familiar cases, and then there are a number that, you know, aren't so familiar. How did you go about picking the stories for this book? Because, I mean, you know, I mean, there's, as you well know, there's a billions and billions out there. How did you choose the specific ones?
It is really difficult to choose, I'll be honest with that, just because it's true. There are so many totally just fantastic cases out there to cover. And so at the end of the day, it really is kind of about what, you know, almost like choosing what to leave out in a manner of speaking, just because, I mean, seriously, you could spend lifetimes sifting through all the encounters that have occurred. For me, you know, I definitely do gravitate towards the weird. So if a case is high strangeness, if it has, you know, patterns to other cases that I can kind of draw between, you know, that definitely stands out to me. Also, too, I mean, again, I've been doing this for so long, so, like, I have a pretty, like, decent knowledge of, you know, a lot of the more, like, classic cases. And just, you know, I read constantly about all of these different phenomena. So it really kind of happens organically. I'll run across, like, a mention of a case, such as the Rochdale creature. I saw just a short little version of that. And I was like, oh, that sounds interesting. And then, you know, once that's caught my eye, I try and find as much information as I can about the particular case. You know, because so often, you know, there's so many different, you know, like handlings of the case where different evidence is presented. You kind of have to narrow down, okay, what seems to have been what actually occurred, what was possibly, you know, journalistic influence, things like that. So I try and find as much material as I can on every particular case and then sift down to the actual events. And then from there, you know, my personal favorite part is really taking kind of a broader look at it and theorizing and trying to see, okay, have I seen anything like this before, and making those connections to different cases. So it's kind of my process.
Now, looking at your book, you have a lot of references. And obviously when something is published in a number of books and magazine articles, there are going to be differences. So how did you hone in on a consistent account of what might have happened?
What I typically do, because, and yeah, it's true, especially with this material, because, you know, specifically like newspapers will often, there'll be misprints, there'll be, you know, people get the dates wrong, things like that. So what I tend to do, and actually a great example of this would be the Cusack encounter. You try, like for me, again, I try and find as many different reprints of the case as I can. And then when you start to see, okay, the same three things are mentioned in every single reprint, that's, you know, likely exactly what happened. And then suddenly you start seeing extra details. So for me, it's a matter of sifting out, where did these details come from? Did they come from actual investigators on the scene? Did they come from, you know, the actual witness talking to someone? Or did it just come from nowhere? And in the case of Cusack, there's this adorable but unfortunately false statement that when the boy saw these strange imps, he actually thought they were children and said, "Do you want to come play with us?" And unfortunately, that was just invented by one of the newspapers of the day, which is a bummer because I know that's such a, I mean, that's just a hilariously cute and also a little freaky statement to include there with this kid seeing these strange imp-like beings and asking them to play. But yeah, unfortunately, that was a journalistic invention. So for me, it's just a matter of sifting through and seeing what actually came from investigators or people interviewing the witnesses or anything like that. And then that is the narrative.
Zelia and Gene and Tim, you're in
the Paracast.
Do you need a website? Well, you can get a great deal on hosting services with Namecheap's legendary coupon code. They're offering substantial hosting discounts on shared hosting, business hosting, VPS hosting, reseller hosting, and even dedicated servers. Namecheap is preferred by millions. It's backed by a money-back guarantee. Use the coupon code LEGENDARY to cash in on the special deal at Namecheap.com, Namecheap.com.
First came Attack of the Rockoids, and it was a critically acclaimed success. And now there is The Coming of the Protectors. A former military intelligence man is contacted by a space woman in a dream. A dream that turns out to be a nightmare, because evil forces on her distant planet are planning to conquer the Earth. This is gripping science fiction of the classic kind. Attack of the Rockoids and The Coming of the Protectors. Find out more at Rockoids.com. That's Rockoids, Rockoids.com.
If you're concerned about the power grid and want to generate your own supply of off-grid electricity, this will be the most important message you'll hear this year. Here's why. We now have a small number of solar generators back in stock. These emergency backup systems provide life-saving backup power when you need it most. And unlike gas generators, solar generators run quietly, emit no dangerous fumes, and produce an endless supply of free electricity from the sun. Whether it's wildfires, dangerous weather, power grid issues, or just getting off the grid, you'll never have to suffer through painful power outages again. Even better, all this week, radio listeners get over $700 in free off-the-grid bonuses, too. Go to MySolarBackup.com to learn more and check availability. That's MySolarBackup.com. Look for the free report, Crisis Cooling, how to make absolutely sure your meat, milk, and medicines stay safe and cool in any power outage. Yours free at MySolarBackup.com.
No matter how large or small your digging project may be, no matter how urban or rural, you must always call 811 before any digging project. 811 is our national one-call number, alerting your local utility companies to come out and mark any lines they have near your dig site. So before you do this or this, make sure you do this. For digging projects big or small, make the call to 811, brought to you by Common Ground Alliance.
Get healthy, not high, with 100% pure CBD powerful natural pain relief from Veterans Vitality. GCN listeners, have you ever thought about how CBD may help you? I'm sure you have heard about the many benefits of CBD. Well, here's your opportunity to try before you buy. Created by veterans and for everyone who deserves better choices, our CBD is derived from organic hemp, grown in the USA, and third-party tested. Veterans Vitality CBD saves you as much as 25 to 50% over our competition, and a portion of all sales is contributed to veteran nonprofits and events. Many of our customers have experienced improved quality of life, help with anxiety, PTSD, and overall well-being. Our products do not contain THC. They are safe, non-addictive, effective, and 100% legal. GCN listeners, get your free trial bottle of premium CBD by simply paying shipping and handling at GCNFreeCBD.com. That's GCNFreeCBD.com. Again, GCNFreeCBD.com. Offered by Veterans Vitality Premium CBD.
No other network provides the level of customer service we do. When it comes to radio advertising, we are your one-stop shop. And no matter how big or small your business is, we can help. Email us at advertise@gcnlive.com and an experienced advertising executive will help you take the first step towards driving more customers to your business or website. advertise@gcnlive.com. Easy, affordable, effective.
We'd like to hear from you. If you have a comment or question about the Paracast, send it to news@theparacast.com. That's news@theparacast.com. And don't forget to visit our famous Paracast community forums at forum.theparacast.com.
Zelia Edgar, question here. Okay, so a journalist made up this aspect of this case. How did you come to realize it was made up by the newspaper person?
That was, thankfully, in one of the other accounts. I can't remember if it was one by Valet or one of my other references there, where he actually made a note, because of course, too, that case was also a little frustrating for me because the newspaper accounts were in French, so that one actually did come. I think it was Valet who pointed out that that was unfortunately a fabrication. But there are other ones, too. I am a sucker for old newspapers because so many of these cases, especially the walking tree stump case from Pioneer Mountain, Oregon, with Kathy Reeves, which the tree stumps are my favorite aspect of the case, and they seem to be the aspect that no one really wanted to take on who was investigating the case. It was rife with almost poltergeist-like manifestations as well as a UFO flap in the area. But that was one that I was able to find a wealth of information, old newspaper clippings and articles, about what was going on in the area at the time. And that was just phenomenal. But even with that, too, you just have to double-check because, I know there was one account that three accounts all had the date correctly, and then one was just, like, totally off by, like, a week or so. It's sifting through and trying to see what the consensus is.
Chasing those footnotes, as Kevin Randall would refer to it. You know, when you mentioned being interested in old newspapers, now we don't really have that many newspapers anymore. We have a lot of them just advertising. A lot of them are run by large corporations like Gannett, where they strip out the personality of the newspapers they buy. And by the way, I used to write for Gannett. I used to write for USA Today, so let me just say that. They strip out all the individuality, and each newspaper becomes a very simplified clone of the other. You don't have the local papers as you did. I remember as a kid going to Times Square, New York City, by subway, and you go to these newspaper stands where they had newspapers from around the country. You want the LA Times? Fine. You want something from upstate New York? Fine. You get to see how the news is covered in different places. Now you don't have that many resources anymore, which is so unfortunate and so sad that it happens. Let me ask you, though, Zelia, obviously you did a lot of research here to find the best, most accurate account of these cases. Were you able to interview any actual witnesses at all?
Not for this book, though that is definitely something that I am looking into for the next one. I've never really done, like, investigations for my channel either, and so that's definitely what I'm looking into moving towards. Because, I mean, that is, it's so fun for me to be able to think of, like, handling things that are current. Because, again, I did focus more on the retro cases for this first one, just because that's how my channel is going. But moving forward, I'm going to see if I can do some live in-person investigations and include those not only on my channel, but my next book, so...
We look forward to hearing about it. Let's go to another case, September 1952. Now, I first heard of this through Gray Barker, although others have written about it as well. The Flatwoods Monster. What can you tell us about the Flatwoods Monster?
Well, that is one of those absolutely fantastic classic cases. And it really, it's intriguing because this is one of those, too, that, again, when I was a kid, really interested in cryptozoology, and I knew the Flatwoods Monster solely as a cryptid, and that's also how I figured Mothman. Really, whatever book I had, I think it was a compendium of cases, and it was really focused on the fact that these are just these strange creatures. Whereas, of course, when you look at it now, there is a lot of more, like, ufological influence on both of these cases. So, of course, the Flatwoods Monster, the story begins that a group of kids is playing in Flatwoods, West Virginia, when they saw what they thought was a meteor going overhead. So there was a whole group of kids, I believe it was about seven kids, who decided to go and see if they could find the meteor. Well, along the way, they gathered two of the boys' mother, Mrs. May, a National Guardsman who's 18 years old, to go with them. Now, most of the group thought that they would just be finding this crashed meteor, whereas one of them jokingly said, hey, we're going to go look for a flying saucer. Now, as they continued towards the area where this thing appeared to have landed, they became aware of this kind of mist and this pungent odor that got worse as they approached the area. Now, one of the group's dogs actually did accompany them, and in most accounts here, too, and this is another fact that I was able to kind of find, get to the bottom of, in most accounts, people say that the dog ran ahead into the mist, and then it ran back out, and it was sick and died later that day. As a matter of fact, in an interview with two of the lead witnesses, the two May brothers, the dog actually lived. So that was, I don't know where that little factoid came from, but yeah, that too was just kind of lost in translation, I guess. So anyway, the group pressed on up to the hill, and suddenly they saw what they first took to be a raccoon or possum in a nearby branch because they saw what they took to be eyeshine. Now, as soon as Eugene Lemon, the National Guardsman, turned his flashlight towards the area to scare it off, they realized that it was not, in fact, a raccoon. It was actually this bizarre creature or thing. They claimed that, and again, this is another great kind of example of how these things get lost in translation. They claimed that it looked completely robotic, almost like some sort of rocket. It had a very mechanical sort of nature that, you know, it did have the classic, like, Ace of Spades shaped, you know, hood that you see in most of the portrayals, but actually, you know, it didn't seem to be a living being. However, when the flashlight hit it, it actually turned towards them, and it had these flashlight-like beams coming from almost like a porthole type thing on its head. Now, at this point, the group panicked. Eugene Lemon apparently even kind of passed out. Mrs. May cleared a fence in one leap, and they all ran back into town. The intriguing thing here, one of my favorite aspects of this case, is that so often when you're dealing with paranormal encounters, people really tend to think that we blow things out of proportion, that we see something mundane, and then we, you know, kind of spin it into something that was extra mundane. Whereas oftentimes you'll see that people actually first try and rationalize what's going on. They see this eye shine in the tree, and they think to themselves, oh, it's just a raccoon, when suddenly they realize it was something quite a bit different than that.
Tim?
I think the aspect of the dog surviving, that's a lot of people were relieved to hear that, because I remember the story as reported by Gray Barker, saying that afterwards the dog got sick, vomited, and then was dead within a few days.
The thing we have to worry about here is that Gray Barker, who was really a brilliant writer and can do some incredible things, he also got disenchanted with UFOs early on, and he had a tendency to exaggerate sometimes.
Yep. Just a little?
Sometimes more than a little.
Yeah. Yeah, that is a prime example. I feel like, because of course, you know, I knew about Barker mainly from Keel's work, and it's so frustrating to see someone who really, you know, I feel like he did, you know, he was interested in a very genuine way in the phenomenon. And then suddenly he was just like, yeah, whatever. I'm going to make up some crazy stuff now.
But I think to some extent, his original book, They Knew Too Much About Flying Saucers, which covered the three men in black that mm-hmm. encountered by Albert K. Bender, I think fundamentally that was a book they sincerely wrote with as accurate a presentation as possible for a major publisher, and it was a pretty good seller. But later on, Barker became the Barker legend, which we can tell all sorts of things about. We've got Zelia and Gene and Tim, you're in
the Paracast.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Be sure to visit GCNLive.com today.
Frustrated trying to get business capital? Want to take the slow process and rejection out of the equation? GCNLoans.com removes the slow, irritating approval process. Instead, get quick, simple funding. Powered by David Allen Capital, 80% of our pre-qualified clients are approved in days. Pre-qualify at GCNLoans.com and get your money this week. It's that easy. GCNLoans.com. That's GCNLoans.com.
What if you could cut your heating bills this winter with your existing wood-burning fireplace and not spend thousands doing it? You can with Great Wall of Fire Fireplace Grates. Our U.S. patented, made-in-America Wall of Fire Grates increase fireplace efficiency, eliminate fireplace smoke problems, and come with a 30-day money-back guarantee. See our grates in action and get free shipping from walloffire.com or call 800-274-7364. Fireplace heat without fireplace smoke. Walloffire.com.
USA Radio News with Chris Barnes.
Huge snow totals up in the Northeast, especially in New England, but it was in New York where two people lost their lives because of that winter storm. Police on Long Island say that one elderly man apparently was shoveling snow and fell into a pool and died. Earlier that day on Long Island, a snowplow driver found an elderly woman dead inside her car.
We are going to take back the White House.
That is former President Donald Trump promising to take back the White House as he spoke at a rally in Conroe, Texas.
And in 2024, we are going to take back that beautiful, beautiful house that happens to be white, that is so magnificent, and that we all love.
A SpaceX Falcon 9 launch that was supposed to happen last night was scrubbed because of bad weather. And this is USA Radio News. Musician Neil Young seems to have started something, as we hear from USA Radio's Wendy King.
Joni Mitchell said Friday she would remove her music from Spotify in protest after recent controversy between Neil Young and the music streaming giant over podcaster Joe Rogan's COVID-19 misinformation. Mitchell, whose music garners 3.7 million monthly listeners on the platform, released a message. She's the first major artist to follow Young in leaving Spotify. Spotify announced on Wednesday that it would remove the entire catalog of Neil Young, who has twice been inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Niles Lofgren, the guitarist from Bruce Springsteen's E Street Band, has also pulled his music from Spotify.
A member of the Manson family being denied parole, 74-year-old Robert Beausoleil, was turned down Friday. He was convicted of a July 1969 murder, and this is USA Radio News.
You don't sit behind a desk every day to earn a living. You're out and about making it happen. And sometimes you get a little bit behind on your paperwork, you know, like bookkeeping and paying your taxes. It's easy to get behind on paying your taxes. It happens to the best of us. And you know what happens next. The big bad IRS comes knocking on your door. And when that happens, you need to call the good old boys at the Tax Doctor. Let them do what they do best. Deal and negotiate with the IRS so you pay the lowest you can in back taxes that the law allows. We are a 100% U.S.-based company, and we've saved our clients millions over the years in back taxes. If you owe $10,000 or more in back taxes, call my friends right now at the Tax Doctor and learn more.
800-507-3137. 800-507-3137. 800-507-3137. That's 800-507-3137.
This is Jerome Clark, author of the UFO Encyclopedia and other books. You're listening to the Paracast.
That, by the way, ladies and gentlemen, I want to say we've just presented to you, after all these years, that was a Flatwoods Monster saying hello in our previous segment. That is the three-quarter imitation.
I have to say one thing about Flatwoods that I love, though, is, and you see this quite a bit, it had such an effect on that area that later encounters that had absolutely nothing to do with the actual Flatwoods Monster were locked in to the Braxton County or Flatwoods Monster of great fame, including, you know, one of my favorite encounters, the Doc Priestley encounter, and there were also the Stover encounter, which occurred in roughly the same area near Marlinton, West Virginia in 1960 and 61. And yeah, you know, they were these Bigfoot-like creatures that people were seeing, but because Flatwoods had just such a hold on that area, people referred to them as new versions of the Flatwoods Monster in the papers, which was really a surprise for me to see.
It's amazing that the Flatwoods Monster case is still being talked about today. Of course, 1952 was an interesting year for the entire UFO phenomenon to begin with. I mean, you had earlier in July the whole Washington, D.C. UFO flap, and then, you know, just a couple months later, here you had the Flatwoods Monster case. And it seems to me, I remember a book that was written that was saying that after the Washington, D.C. incident, that Air Force jets were ordered to try to shoot down UFOs, and one author was speculating that the Flatwoods Monster case could have been the result of one of these interactions.
Was that Ivan Sanderson? Because I know he discussed the possibility that in Uninvited Visitors, he discussed the Flatwoods Monster at great length. And I know he discussed the possibility, too, that there was, you know, there was some flaw in its ship, and so it went down, and the ship, like, melted away. It was, he was an intriguing, intriguing guy as well.
Unfortunately, he left us too early. But I met him a few times, went to his farm house a few times.
Oh,
and
wow.
And he definitely was an interesting character. Now, one of the theories he made was that at least some UFOs were living creatures.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of similar to a gentleman by the name of Trevor James Constable, who wrote a book called They Live in the Sky, talking about legends.
Oh, yes.
He also claimed to be a friend, Sanderson, of M.K. Jessup, who wrote some books in the 50s. And then, in a very strange incident, offed himself in his car in Miami, Florida.
Yes.
Very strange. And Sanderson, last I remember, thought there was something more to that death than a suicide attempt.
Oh, I was not aware of that part. The personalities at that time, too. I mean, the whole thing, you have such interesting material, and then you have such absolutely intriguing people, you know, just these characters dealing with this material. It's just, it is simply phenomenal.
Weird stuff, unusual characters, people will never know again. Sadly, many have left us from now. Jim Moseley, for example, Gray Barker, Tim Beckley, certainly one of the more interesting characters that our co-host Tim Swartz had worked with for a number of years. You go through it. Go through the names. John Keel, Richard Hall, all these people. Dr. Hynek, of course.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I know. Wish I had a time machine just to be able to, like, meet these people, yeah.
Now, there's one story in your book. This is one you talk about having a time machine. You'd love to go back to see what actually happened here. And that was Case 20, the Sandown Sam story. I don't know if I've ever heard that one before.
Oh, that is truly a weird one. And, you know, I will admit, I am definitely biased towards stories that have these creatures that are beings or entities or whatever you want to call them that really have no comparison elsewhere, appearance-wise. And this is definitely one of them. So, of course, Sandown Sam, this occurred on the Isle of Wight in England, and a 7-year-old girl who's pseudonymously referred to as Faye Y, which they couldn't have chosen a better pseudonym. I mean, that is a direct call out to the fairy faith, was with a boy of her same age. And they were just actually, you know, playing and kind of walking around through this sort of meadowy area, the Isle of Wight, when they heard this siren-like noise. So they went looking for it, and they tracked the siren-like noise over a golf course and through another meadow, and then suddenly it stopped. And so as they were crossing this little footbridge, this gloved hand popped out from under the bridge, and this was followed by this tall, truly bizarre entity. The best way to describe it is almost as like a clown-like automaton. It was wearing a very, like, almost classic, kind of like court jester-type suit, but its face was absolutely flat and devoid of any sort of, like, mobility or anything like that. This is one of those cases that it's really, really far out there. You have the out-there cases. This is, like, the fringe of the fringe, because these two children ended up really discussing almost nothing with this being for roughly about half an hour. At one point, it even invited them into this strange windowless metallic hut where it performed a strange conjuring trick with a berry. And then finally, they just wandered off because they wanted someone else to see this thing. And at the end of the day, they came to the conclusion that it was either a ghost or a man in a costume, which to me, that is even more frightening than if it was some sort of bizarre, anomalous being. Now, the weird thing about this is that apparently through the whole duration of their encounter, there were workmen nearby who took absolutely no notice of whatever was going on, whether it was actually a person in a costume or some sort of anomalous being. Now, the reason that it seems to me to still be anomalous is because the girl's father claimed that for some years he had had multiple UFO encounters. So again, you have kind of that concept of familial anomaly, so to speak, where he had had these kind of increasing in closeness, increasing in detail, these UFO encounters. They started with just lights in the sky and finally culminated some years later in him seeing these two submerged objects that he said looked like giant glowing eyes out in the ocean, until finally, a couple years after that, his daughter had this encounter with a strange being.
Now, I should bring our listeners up to date. A few months ago, we had Colm Kelleher, who, of course, worked with Robert Bigelow for many years, and he pointed to something which it's possible the Pentagon may even look into it, called the Hitchhiker Effect, where you see a UFO and you bring back something and you have other encounters. It's like maybe you're infected with a paranormal disease. You're talking about families with a history of strange encounters. And if you wonder here, was there a first encounter decades ago, whatever, that caused somebody to catch the paranormal disease?
Well, I know, too, that Jenny Randall has found that a lot of her repeat contactees, of anything, whether it's poltergeist-type activity or strange being like creatures, like cryptids, or UFOs, at some point in their early childhood had a sighting of light anomalies. So I thought that was absolutely intriguing, especially because that's one of my earliest encounters. I actually don't personally remember it, but my mom remembers me seeing what I called a glowing ball in the hallway when I was about 2 years old. So that definitely stood out to me. But it seems as though a lot of times people who have these kind of recurrent phenomena many, many years in the past will often have something that they may have even forgotten about, where they saw simply strange lights.
Well, we always see that sometimes strange lights precipitate other things, yes.
There does seem to be a special focus on light anomalies, and even just the presence of light in paranormal phenomena. That's something that I find intriguing. I know Keel definitely saw that as a pattern as well.
And that's something that's been that's being observed by people who've had Bigfoot experiences, that a lot of times in the areas that these creatures are seen, there's also orb or other kinds of a weird light phenomena taking place.
You know, we're going to have Zelio join us also on After the Paracast, our premium show, because there's a chapter in the book called Speculations that I'd like to go over with her, and I think that would be the best time because I'm going to ask her about the current investigations into UFOs and what she thinks is going to come from it. We've got more to come. Zelio and Gene and Tim, you're in
the Paracast.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Be sure to visit GCNLive.com today.
Hey, listeners. I want you to have the entire Paracast experience. So I'd like to tell you about After the Paracast. After the Paracast is an exclusive feature for subscribers to the Paracast Plus. With After the Paracast, you never know what's going to happen next. After the Paracast features color commentary, special interviews, and further conversations with Paracast guests. With Paracast Plus, you can download a very special enhanced version of the Paracast also. We do offer exclusive music, videos, and more features are coming. To get more info about subscribing, please visit theparacast.plus. Once again, theparacast.plus. Prices are just $1.50 a week, less than a cup of coffee at your local convenience store. Check out theparacast.plus to learn more about Paracast Plus.
No matter if supply lines are down, product deliveries are slow, and that most everything costs more these days, you still have neck and shoulder pain, right? Good news. Sunny Bay has new products that target neck and shoulder pain. Products that are in stock now, ready to ship anywhere now. Like our extra long neck heating pads. They provide soothing relief to painful sore necks and backs. You can heat them in a microwave oven, and they come in a variety of colors and patterns. And for stress relief, get our lavender scent hands-free neck wraps. Or maybe you need one of our smaller lower back wraps. Great for seniors. Again, there's no shipping delays from Sunny Bay. Find our new products on Amazon, Walmart, Etsy, and sunny-bay.com. Just search for Sunny Bay neck wraps. All our products are great for men or women, are reusable, and easy to clean. Remember, just search for Sunny Bay neck wraps. Order now because stock is high and shipping is fast from Sunny Bay.
Tahibo Tea Club's original Pure Pau de Arco Super Tea comes from the only tree in the world that fungus does not grow on. As a result, it naturally has antifungal, anti-infection, antiviral, antibacterial, anti-inflammation, and anti-parasite properties. So the tea is great for healthy people because it helps build the immune system, and it can truly be miraculous for someone fighting a potentially life-threatening disease due to an infection, diabetes, or cancer.
The tea is also organic and naturally caffeine-free. A one-pound package of tea is $49.95, which includes shipping. To order, please visit shopsupertea.com. The first word is shop, spelled S-H-O-P, then the word super, and then the word tea. The complete website is shopsupertea.com or call us at 818-984-6100 Monday through Saturday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. California time. That's 818-984-6100. Shopsupertea.com.
Jake was in big trouble with the IRS. He owed how much?
$92,000.
Ouch. The IRS left no room for Jake to breathe.
They put a lien on my house, took all the money out of my bank account, took money out of my paychecks. So it was a nightmare.
He needed help fast.
I figured that all these companies were the same until I called Federal Tax Management. You could just tell they knew what they were talking about. Right then and there, I felt like I had some hope.
Stop the liens, levies, and garnishments fast and qualify for one of several special IRS programs that could reduce or even eliminate your tax debt. So, how'd it go for Jake?
They did what they said they would do. They came through for me. I ended up saving an unbelievable amount. I was so jazzed. I was extremely happy.
If you owe more than $10,000 in back taxes, take Jake's advice.
Give Federal Tax Management a phone call. If they help me, they can help anybody.
Call the Federal Tax Management Hotline now. 800-503-8625. 800-503-8625. 800-503-8625.
Tracy Torme, screenwriter, producer. You're listening to Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio.
Okay, just to tell you, I am very confident that the young people on this planet will continue to explore the unknown, and Zelia Edgar is an example. I'm old enough to be a grandfather and then some, but she's just way up there in terms of knowledge. And the book, by the way, I'll recommend it very highly. Just Another Tinfoil Hat Presents. That's from Beyond the Fray Publishing, and we've had other authors from that company on the show. It's a really, really well-written book. Fast, breezy, you'll love it like we did.
That's very high praise, so I just can't thank you enough.
Okay, you can send the check to...
Will do, will do. I should probably also mention, I guess it was just released today, I did sign on for the sequel, effectively, to my first book, so that will probably be coming out later this year. Very, very excited about that as well.
That's terrific. Congratulations, and you'll thank be you. Back when that happens.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Okay, we did mention, of course, Mothman, peripherally. What's your take on that?
Oh my gosh. The events of Point Pleasant in 66 and 67, I mean, they really are kind of the epitome of high strangeness. You know, I think that the Mothman can't really be separated from the other events that were going on at the time, particularly the poltergeist manifestations and the UFO activity, you know, the strange anomalous lights that were being seen in the sky. You know, a lot of people really focus on it as some, you know, harbinger of doom, of course, for the Silver Bridge tragedy. I'm not necessarily sure if I see it particularly that way. I'm also not sure if I would ever really separate what happened with the bridge collapse from the events, because it really did seem as though they were interconnected in some way, especially too when you look at how many people in the area were having prophetic dreams about something happening on the Ohio River. It's all interconnected in some way. But yeah, the Mothman is another prime example. That was another one that as a kid, I was like, oh, it's a cryptid. It's got to be some undiscovered owl or some undiscovered flying beast or something, or maybe it was a mutation. And it was many, many years when I finally read the Mothman prophecies that I realized this is probably one of the clearest high strangest entities that we can really nail down and be like, there is something even more bizarre than an undiscovered creature about this, because physically it doesn't make any sense. You know, its wingspan was not big enough for it to even be able to take off in flight. Yet here you have these witness encounters where they say that it just took off from standing. It didn't even flap its wings. So it really seemed nearly like spectral in nature. That whole event was such just an epitome of high strangeness. I would love to have seen that.
Did you ever read a book from Gray Barker called Silver Bridge?
That is his one book that I have not read yet. I've read They Knew Too Much About Flying Saucers and Men in Black, The Secret Terror, and a few others of his, but that one I haven't read yet.
it paints a more surreal picture of the Mothman and the collapse of the bridge.
Well, that will have to move higher up on my to-read list then.
I would recommend it because that's kind of almost like a head trip. In some ways, yeah. One of the best books that Barker wrote, but it's not a literal, let me use that word again, it's not a literal interpretation of what happened.
Ah, so it's kind of more abstract in a way?
Very much so.
Interesting. Oh,
it's beautifully written, though. I mean, when Barker really wanted to, he could really write. He could really turn a phrase.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I definitely picked up on that in his other works. But, man, I'm not even sure if I have that one in physical copy, or I'll have to see if I've got that, because I know it's been on my reading list forever. I am terrible with that. I've got hundreds and hundreds of books that I'm like, okay, got to get that one, because I got to read this one, got to read that one. And I can easily just sit there with my head spinning, being like, okay, which one should I start next?
Gene, you have to remind me, there was a reissue of it a couple of years ago, wasn't there?
Yes, there's a company called New Sorcerian, which kind of revisits the works from Gray Barker and his publishing house. Paperback book is $17.99. It's affordable. Now, I should point out here that the introduction to the book is from Jim Moseley. The foreword is from Alan Greenfield, who is another person I've known for 1,000 years, and he was very, very supportive of this book. However, there is also a hardcover version of the book selling for $1,424.95.
Holy smokes.
I'm glad you didn't use the other word because I was about to. But I'm assuming this is one of those situations where it's a create space, as a matter of fact, where you can publish a book and you don't actually have to pay for it. And what they do is they print on demand. They have these elaborate Xerox machines, and they can print a book like that anytime you need one.
Isn't that wild?
Isn't
it? I only heard about that recently. I was like, that is insane.
The machine prints and collates. I believe it binds the book. It's not expensive to authors because you can submit the manuscript, set up the account, and then for each book you get a certain royalty. Or you can buy the book for a really low price if you want to stock up.
Huh. Oh, gosh. Well, this has been before Borders went out. I remember hearing vaguely way back when that they were trying to look into, like, something like that. Or maybe it's Barnes & Noble, even, that was thinking of, like, you know, a customer can just walk in and press a button and get a book. And at the time, I was like, this sounds like Star Trek stuff, man, like science fiction.
You'd have to have a physical file of that book, which would be like a PDF or something similar, or a Microsoft Word file. And then you'd have to have a copy of the cover. It's not just printing any book. In that case, it'd be something within their availability of files. But eventually, yeah, maybe they can do that. I mean, you can almost do that at Google. You know, look at free books, and sometimes Google releases books that aren't free. But we don't want to get into the Google discussion. And I do not wish to get into that today. In this particular case, though, your publisher was Beyond the Fray, and of course, they've done some very interesting titles because we've had other authors on. We're getting near the end of our main show. You'll be back for After the Paracast. Maybe take a minute or two to explain to listeners where they can find more of your work.
If you look up Just Another Tinfoil Hat, you will find me eventually. My website is justanothertinfoilhat.com. My YouTube channel is Just Another Tinfoil Hat. And of course, my book, From Beyond the Fray, is Just Another Tinfoil Hat Presents. My website's probably one of the best ways to contact me.
Now, the channel. Tell us quickly about the YouTube channel.
Sure thing. So, you know, if you like the idea of kind of eclectic retro cases viewed from a more high strangeness angle, then give it a shot. Currently, I do 2 research videos a month, and then I also do horror movie reviews and paranormal book reviews. That's my current format, and I'm looking to introduce some recorded investigations as soon as the weather is not 30 degrees below zero like it is right now.
Horror film reviews? Tell me more.
Yeah, so one of my videos every month is just a short review of a horror movie because I, in addition to the paranormal, I also love horror fiction. I'm a sucker for, like, H.P. Lovecraft is one of my favorite authors, right up there with Poe. Horror movies, too. You know, there's a lot of bad ones out there, but there's also quite a few really good ones. So I only review the ones I like. if you trust my judgment, you can hear what I have to say about horror movies and maybe pick up one that you'd be totally frightened by. I don't know.
Ah, all about the monsters.
Oh, yes.
I go back to the days of watching the first release on television of the original Universal horror films. Let's tell you where you can find us. You can find us on Twitter. Look for the Paracast. Look for the Paracast on Facebook. And for some reason, they will not allow our URL to appear on Facebook. I think we've frightened them off. They can't take it anymore. They've stuck their head out the window and said they're mad as hell and they can't take it anymore when they publish the Paracast.com URL. I'm kidding. You can also find branded merchandise at the Paracast.shop. That's the Paracast.shop. That's where you can pick from several different logos and get the T-shirts and the throw pillows and all that good stuff. We also have the Paracast Plus at the Paracast.plus, where we offer this show free of the network ads with higher quality audio, and the After the Paracast podcast, where Zelia will be back, and that we offer as a premium extra for subscribers. It is uncensored. It is provocative, and you're going to want to hear After the Paracast. We also have the special deal, by the way, where if you use the coupon code UFO20, UFO20, for 5-year and lifetime subscriptions to the Paracast Plus, you get a 20% discount on the Paracast Plus. Zelia Edgar, thank you for joining us on the Paracast.
Well, thank you so much for having me on. This has been so much fun.
Paracast, featuring Gene Steinberg, is a copyrighted presentation of Making the Impossible, Incorporated. Tune in next week for a new adventure in the Paracast.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Visit GCNlive.com today.
Attack of the Rockoids has been well received by critics and readers alike. It's a thrill-a-minute story you'll never forget. A former U.S. military intelligence officer is haunted by intense dreams about a beautiful woman pleading for his help after a terrible battle in outer space. But the dreams turn out to be true and thrust him into a telepathic love affair with a woman whose faraway planet is intent on destroying the Earth. And now the gripping tale continues in The Coming of the Protectors. It's the second book of the Rockoids trilogy, a galaxy-spanning adventure that pits our hapless heroes against powerful, fanatical enemies that threaten the lives of freedom-loving beings everywhere. Attack of the Rockoids and The Coming of the Protectors, classic science fiction at its best, available now. For more details, visit Rockoids.com. That's Rockoids.com.
Now with orders to stay at home, public health concerns, the reality of illness due to pathogens and viruses, your health is at an all-time high risk. That's why it's critical to take a proactive approach to boost your immune system. You can with new nano-colloidal silver from Americare. Our patented process with tiny silver particles, 1/100th the size of a red blood cell, allows for maximum body absorption. Americare's nano-colloidal silver effectively disinfects your body internally, attacking pathogens and viruses while supercharging your immune system. Colloidal silver is antibacterial and antiviral. Simply put, it prohibits bacterial respiration, suffocating viral cells, preventing the virus from replicating. And now, due to public health concern, Americare is authorized to offer our lowest and best price ever, around $1 a day, but supplies are limited. Purchase nano colloidal silver now at immunesupportnow.com. That's immunesupportnow.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Supplies are limited.